Welcome to the preaching ministry of Tri-City Baptist Church in Chandler, Arizona. Our desire is that God would be magnified through the preaching of His Word, and that Christians would be challenged, strengthened, and edified in their personal walk with Christ.
We are continuing our study of learning from bad examples, beginning in 1 Corinthians 10. And so I would invite you to turn there, though each of these weeks, as we have been considering these examples that are given, we've gone back to the Old Testament, since that is the place that these stories are really laid out for us. It's an important aspect that we would learn, that we would gain the warnings that are given for us. It says in this passage, and we're going to be considering the second half of what we began last week, the resisting of rebellious tendencies. And primarily looking at, we'll be looking at it this evening from Numbers chapter 16. But it says in this passage, in the opening verses, in verse 11 of chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, "Now all these things happened to them for examples and were written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the age have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." These are written for a warning. We've said before, what do we learn from history but that we fail to learn from history? I was struck by this on Friday evening. If you were here for the Tri-City Christian Academy play, and the play Remember My Name, it was set in Nazi-occupied France during World War II, and this Jewish girl that was being hidden because of that. And as we considered this, when Mr. Payne suggested this possibility last fall for the Academy presenting this, one of the discussion points that was brought up was the timeliness of this, considering the rise of anti-Semitism in our own country. And as I thought of that and seeing that play, if you've been through the Holocaust Museum in Israel, or really any of the Holocaust memorials, you're confronted with the true evil of the depraved heart. There's a repulsion that is visceral. And as you look at that, you know, the questions come up, you know, how could that happen? And then really almost that response that it would never be allowed, we would never allow it to happen. And we can't imagine those atrocities ever happening again until we look around our world. And we see not only could they are. And what do we learn from history that we fail to learn from history? We also learn that it's easy to think that we stand and we need to take heed lest we fall. And recognizing this is really the emphasis of 1 Corinthians 10, the larger context being that of Christian liberty issues. And so we've looked at a number of examples. We've looked at the first four that are here, that first example, don't lust after evil things from Numbers 11, and we realized that it wasn't the nature of what they desired, but the intensity of their desires that was evil. And it brought them to a place where they were complaining about God's provision. He had provided manna. And they weren't satisfied with that. They grumbled, they griped, they complained. The second one, don't be idolaters, from Exodus chapter 32. It's the golden calf incident. And as Aaron said, tomorrow will be a feast to the Lord. But it was not to the Lord. It was to the flesh. And last week as we reviewed this, I just made the passing comment. If your leadership causes people to get naked and cast off restraint, you're failing in your spiritual leadership. It was almost a tongue-in-cheek until I opened my email on Monday morning. And I got a link to a story of a Christian's men's conference in the Midwest. And it opened with and I put it in quotes because some have said they're not convinced he's former, but a former male stripper ripping off his shirt, climbing up a pole, and swallowing a sword. And the organizers defended it, saying it was more of a circus act. It was a circus pole, not a stripper pole. And they said in their information, "We are promoting supermanly testosterone explosion as our theme." And I thought, how about promoting holiness instead of male hormones? Let's focus on God-fearing people. And they were actually rebuked by another pastor who has his own set of problems and has had his own problems in ministry, and he was right. And the first article I read, I've seen a couple on this. The first one said, and they named this person, if he is the sober voice of reason at your men's conference, it says a lot about the quality of the leaders at your church. What did they do? They cast off restraint. And it wasn't just back in the Old Testament. It's happening in America today. And it's all in the supposed liberty. Instead of having a circus, let's have a service to raise godly people. And the idea that we learn, and we see this at the end of 1 Corinthians 10, is that whether we eat or drink, we're to do everything to the glory of God. The third one that we saw was in Numbers 25. It's verse 8, don't commit fornication. We saw that it was Balaam's counsel to Balak, that he counseled to invite Israel to pagan worship, and they took part in the pagan worship and then into immorality. And 24,000 Israelites died because of their spiritual and moral infidelity. Example 4 was from Numbers 21, and then that 39th year of their wilderness wandering, and they became frustrated and impatient and griped and complained. And last week we began looking at that fifth example. In verse 10 it says, neither murmur as some of them murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. And last week we looked at it from the aspect of Numbers chapter 14, the evil report concerning the promised land. And the points that we saw there, that they blamed Moses and Aaron for their plight and rather than seeing their personal unbelief. Caleb and Joshua said, let's go in. God's given us this land. It was their unbelief, but they blamed Moses. Moses intercedes for them. And the intercession was based on the greatness of God and his goodness, not, well, they're not that bad. And the understanding of the character of God, that the instigators of that rebellion, the spies, died immediately in a plague. And the warning, don't follow faithless leadership that leads away from both God's will and God's way. And we saw this there, that they feared the people of the land rather than fearing God. But they blamed Moses. And all of this takes place, that Moses is the one interceding, and yet they were influenced in the wrong way. And I took last week to look at chapter 14, because that is one of the possibilities of what that, because it said all the people complained. And as verse 10 here in 1 Corinthians says, that don't complain, don't grumble as they did. However, what is referred to in verse 10 of 1 Corinthians 10 is probably pointing to Numbers chapter 16. As I said, commentators go both ways, but there's strong evidence that number 16 is what's being referred to. And so let me have you turn back to number 16 this evening, because what I want us to see is that passage and the realization. It's the passage that speaks of Korah's rebellion and then the repercussions of this. It's a lengthy passage. I would encourage you to read the entire passage. We're not going to take time and read all 50 verses this evening. But when you see what is taking place, you realize it's layer upon layer. Now, between chapters 14 of Numbers, which we considered last week, and number 16 is Numbers 15. And in Numbers 15, the chapter contains a number of stipulations that are involved with the Mosaic Law. There are the laws concerning offerings in the first 21 verses of that chapter. And then how to deal with unintentional sins in verses 22 through 29. And then dealing with the presumptuous, the high-handed sin in verses 30 through 31, which is, we're going to see some of that high-handedness in the example this evening. In verses 32 through 36, you have the example of a man who was found gathering sticks on the Sabbath day. And they have to, God says to put him to death. And we would say, well, that seems harsh. He was doing yard work on the Sabbath. No, keeping the Sabbath was part of the covenant for Israel. It was part of that covenant agreement. And to violate it willfully was despising the covenant that God had with Israel. This was not a mere oops. This was that high-handed disregard. And the penalty under a holy God was the death penalty. And then the end of chapter 15, verses 37 through 41, are dealing with concerning tassels on garments. So there's a lot of specifics in between And it's interesting because I think we're going to see some of that come into play as we consider this passage this evening. What we find, and if you have your Bibles open to number 16, I want us to read the first several verses. But as I said, this entire chapter is going to be dealing with this. It says, "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelah, the sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, 'You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?' And when Moses heard it, he fell on his face." And it says, "And then he spoke to Korah and all the company, saying, 'Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near, that one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him.'" We'll stop our reading there for the moment. We're going to look at more of this. But we see a problem arising. Now, I want us to consider a couple of things from this just as we begin. Who are the people involved? Verse 1 gives us several names of those in leadership. We have Korah and Dathan and Abiram and On. But it also tells us something about their lineage, their heritage, their background. Korah is a son of Levi. That's his lineage. He's a Levite. And Dathan, Abiram, and On are Reubenites. And so they've got a pretty solid heritage. And it starts with these men, but they involve a number of others. Notice how many people are mentioned to be involved. There are 250 men. In fact, look again at verse 2. In this, it says there are 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. What do we learn about them? There's actually three descriptive terms, phrases in this passage, in this verse. They are leaders. They're chiefs among the people. They're chosen representatives. They're well known and they had status. That they had been selected to be representatives, and they're men of renown. They're well known. They have status. So these agitators were influential leaders in Israel. And this is a landmark situation. This is a landmark event in Israel's history. It's going to establish God's view, what he thinks about rebellion. In fact, in Jude verse 11, it names three individuals that those who have departed from the faith, heretics, are compared to: Cain, Balaam because of his greed, and Korah because of his rebellion. That is not the who's who list that you want your name on. But that's where Korah is going to be. And it hurts when somebody close would betray you. These are people that are close. And I want you to see a little bit more of what we see in this passage. Notice that Korah is the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. Now, on the slide, I've given you another reference. We're not going to turn there. But in Exodus chapter 6, we learn a little bit more about Kohath. He has four sons that are mentioned there. It says, "And the sons of Kohath were Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uzal." And so we've got these three, and then there's that one other name, Amram. Who is Amram? Well, he married a woman named Jochebed. And Amram and Jochebed had two boys and a girl. Their children were Miriam, Aaron, and Moses. Moses and Korah were cousins. This isn't just one of thousands in Israel. This was Moses' own cousin that is leading this uprising and what takes place. So So what we see that what takes place now is you've got 250 people that are joining these agitators, they're influential leaders. And they begin, first of all, by spreading the allegations privately before it becomes public. They start with the pre-campaign, a whisper campaign. They go around, and so they find out that they've got some support, that they're not alone. Korah doesn't go to his cousin Moses and say, look, I'm trying to understand God's leadership pattern here. What's the structure? What is God seeking to do? Help me understand and help me know how I can help. No, that's not it at all. It says in verse 1, Korah took men. When you take out all the family lineage, all this that is begins with now Korah, and it concludes with took men. They gather people together. It really began with a whisper campaign. You know, what do you think about how Moses and Aaron are running things here? You know, do you really agree with how they handled things back at Kadesh Barnea? I mean, okay, the spies were wrong. They shouldn't have brought an evil report. But, you know, sure, we should have probably gone into the land. But, you know, and we shouldn't have threatened to stone Moses and Aaron. That was probably going a little too far. But to send us to 40 years in the wilderness and then death? I mean, doesn't that seem a little harsh? I mean, is that a little overkill? No, well, and how do we really know that that's what God said to Moses? Moses is telling us that's what God says. How do we know for sure? And then in chapter 15, we've got this guy who was killed for picking up sticks on the Sabbath. You know, again, you know, Moses seems to come down pretty hard. Do you think that's right? Unbelief plus disobedience equal rebellion. And they begin with this coalition. And while the attack is directed toward human authority on the surface, that's not actually what's taking place. You know, they don't come to Moses and they say, they rise up against him and say, you've taken too much on yourself. And they didn't follow up with, so how can we help you? That's not it at all. They're saying, you're assuming too much. And while they're accusing Moses, notice what they're actually doing. Look down at verse 11. Moses is saying to them, therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him? It's like, what's Aaron have to do with this? Why did you drag him into this? Well, there's a reason that they dragged him into this. And part of what they're doing is they're arguing, look, we don't need you. All the people are holy. But they're rising up against Aaron, against Moses, and really what they're doing is they're rising up against God. That Moses didn't ask for this job. In fact, if you know the story, he tried to give God all the reasons he shouldn't have it. He had a whole list of excuses. But what they're doing is they are rising up against these men. And while they're doing it on the surface there, it's the human authorities, the real authority they're against is God. And we see this taking place. But notice their accusation, going back to verse 3. It says, and they gathered against Moses, and you take too much on yourselves. All the congregation is holy. Every one of them. The Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? Do you realize there is an element of truth in those accusations? They were holy. It says in Exodus 19:6 that they were a holy nation. And it says, and the Lord is among them. That was also true. Exodus 29, verses 45 and 46 say, I will dwell among them. Numbers 35, the Lord dwell among them. So there was an element of truth in what they were saying. That's what made the accusations believable. That they're believable accusations because they have an element of truth. But it's not being presented for righteousness. They're in essence saying, we don't need Moses telling us what to do. We're good people. And when you read chapter 15, we say, you know, maybe some of this is a little bit over the top. You know, we're talking about tassels on the clothes. No, Moses, we're all holy. We're all good people. You know, we don't need you telling us what to do. And they're doing this under the pretext of gaining the moral high ground. We have a spiritual concern, Moses. You're minimizing the holiness of the people. And that was their pretext. Their concerns sound spiritual, but that's not really the case. That's not it. As Korah is saying, well, we want opportunities to serve. He has opportunities to serve. He has tremendous privileges in serving. He wants more. He wants Aaron's job. That's why he's bringing Aaron into this. And so in verses 3, verse 7, when they say, you take too much on yourself, and Moses says, no, you're taking too much on yourself. And in verse 5, he tells them, he speaks to them, says, tomorrow the Lord will show himself holy. And now he's telling them to bring their censers. That should have struck fear in their hearts, but it didn't. It was nothing like that, because they had a different agenda. They had an agenda that was hidden. Korah wants the priesthood. Look at verse 10. And again, I'm jumping through this for sake of time, but I would encourage you to read the whole chapter. It says, and he has brought you near to himself, you and all the brethren, the sons of Levi. He's saying, look, you've got a great opportunity here. Are you also seeking the priesthood? Are you seeking the priesthood too? Saying, is that really what you're after? That was the goal. This is what he was looking for. That Korah wants the priesthood. And this is why, you know, said, why are you complaining against Aaron? Because they want his job. That's what Korah is after. And then with Dathan and Abiram, they're defiant rebels. Look at verse 12. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, we will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. Notice the defiance. But isn't it interesting what they said? Notice the accusations that you have brought us out of, what did they say? The land flowing with milk and honey. What land are they referring to? They're talking about Egypt. They said, you took us out of the land flowing with milk and honey, and you haven't brought us into a land with milk and honey. You've left us here to die in the wilderness. Said last week, the more they desired the land they left, the more they despised the land to which they were going. And now their attitude is, they're telling Moses, forget it, we're not coming up. And they make this statement in verse 14, it says, will you put out the eyes of these men? For us, that's kind of a strange, what does that mean? Well, the accusation there is that Moses had a hidden agenda. That you're not really letting us see the real agenda. You're blinding people from your actual plan. These are defiant rebels. They're accusing Moses of ulterior motives while viewing Egypt as the land flowing with milk and honey. And just it's just a horrible situation. All of this takes place. And eventually, what takes place, and I'm going to jump through it quickly, but Moses the next day, it says in verse 15, Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. I have not taken a donkey from them. I have not hurt one of them. And he tells Korah, tomorrow you're going to find out. You and all your company be present and bring your censers, and we're going to see. And it says in verse 19, Korah now gathers the entire congregation against Moses and Aaron at the door of the tabernacle. And now the glory of the Lord is seen. And God speaks to Moses and Aaron and says, get away from them. I'm going to wipe them out as one person. And now again, Moses intercedes. They fall on their face, verse 22, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation? And the Lord is saying, get away from their tents. Speak to the congregation. Get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Back up, because this is not going to go well if you're near them. And it says that Moses speaks to the people, and tells them, it says in verse 26, spoke to the congregation and said, depart from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sin. And Israel moves away. They get away. And Korah, Dathan, Abiram, it says in verse 27, they're standing at the doors of their tents with their wives, with their sons, and with their little children. It's interesting. Their rebellion affects their children. There are eternal consequences to what they did. And in verse 28, Moses says, if these men die natural deaths, if they die of natural causes, then I am not the person that God has called. But it says, if God does something new, verse 30, if God creates a new thing and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up and all their belongings and they go down alive into the pit, then understand these men have rejected the Lord. And when he finishes speaking, that's what happens. The ground opens up and these men go down into it. And it is a fearful thing. And all of this takes place. And Israel then flees. They're concerned that they're going to fall into this pit as well. Fire comes down and consumes the 250 men. They've brought their censers, and they're consumed. They're burned up. And then God speaks to Moses and says, have Eleazar go get those censers and then flatten them out. They're going to be a reminder. They're going to be hammered and cover the altar to remind these people that God is holy. Now, all of this happens. The sinfulness is revealed. And we see that in this passage. The sinfulness is revealed, but unfortunately, it doesn't end. The discontent infects and destroys others. So now all of this has taken place. The earth opens up. The ground swallows them. The Lord speaks. And this there's this destruction that comes because of this. But it breeds grumbling. The dissenters are gone. The next day, the smoke still lingers in the air. The dust is still settling. And now they blame Moses for killing the people of the Lord. That's the accusation that they make in this passage. In verse 41, you have killed the people of the Lord. Judging from the direction they went, these were not God's people. They had a different father. And it was evident. But isn't it interesting that just because those who had started this rebellion are gone, it doesn't mean the rebellion ended. And the danger of that. And so the very next day, this is happening. And what we see is that selfish people fail to see God's working. God had spared their lives. God was ready to wipe them all out. And it was Moses and Aaron who interceded, and now they're accusing them of being the ones who killed the people of the Lord. And we see that Korah despised the God-given ministry that he had. That really is verses 8 and 9. And Israel fails to heed the warning in verses 40 and 41. And they all blame it on Moses and Aaron, the very two that are standing and seeking to intercede. And what takes place after this is because of this continued rebellion, God strikes them and a plague begins to spread through the people. And again, God is angry with their rebellion. And this plague is spreading through the people. And Moses tells Aaron to take the censer and go in and offer sacrifice, that their lives would be spared. And it says in verse 47, then Aaron took it from Moses, as Moses commanded, ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had begun among the people, and he put incense and made an atonement for the people. In verse 48, and he stood between the dead and the living, so the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. And we see the judgment of God. You know, God's wrath is kindled by this. 14,700 die because Korah wanted to be the priest. And the others wanted leadership. They despised the ministry that God had given them. Folks, We have to be willing to serve where God has us and learn from their examples of the danger. There are several points of application, and I've just put them all up there at once that we can learn from, that God's wrath was kindled by the discontent and complaining. Over and over and over in these examples, we've seen that discontent. They wanted garlic, they wanted fish, they wanted meat. They're discontent, they wanted a shortcut. They're discontent, that over and over, and God hears it. That we're to do all things without griping and complaining. That's a great verse to teach our children, especially if they complain about food. That's a pretty consistent pattern that we see in these examples. And just because a complaint sounds spiritual doesn't make it right. Oh, well, all the people are holy. That actually was true. God is among them. That was true. But that didn't make the complaint right. That God still had an authority structure. That God had established Moses as the leader and Aaron as his spokesperson. And recognizing that this was what God had established, just because somebody has Bible verses to prove their point, we have to make sure we're looking deeper than that. Is there another agenda? There was with Korah. There was with Dathan and Abiram. They had other plans. The people, critical people tend to hide their true agenda. And it's under the pretext of righteous concerns. Do you really think that's the best way? And it's easy to ask the questions. Not all questions are legitimate questions. The question is, who's asking and why? Yes, we can ask, but it has to be with the right spirit. I mean, look, go back to Genesis 3. This is where it began. Has God really said? It was just a question. And Eve falls into the trap on trying to defend God and answer and get into this religious discussion. Now, she minimizes God's graciousness. She magnifies the judgment. But it began with a question. We have to be very careful. Critical people hide their true agenda. And people who listen to the word of the selfish leaders ended up rejecting the faithful leaders. And they got to a point where they couldn't tell the difference. You've killed the people of God. No, actually, it wasn't the people of God that died. It was the children of the devil that died. Because Satan is the rebel. And they're the ones who died. And to see that happen, and that spiritual people will handle legitimate concerns in a biblical manner. That if we have legitimate concerns, there's a biblical way to handle that. But we have to have the right motives. Korah's motive was not, Moses, you're taking too much on. How can we help you? No, it's, I want to be the priest. I'm bucking for Aaron's job. And God does not pick priests by a general election. He chose Aaron. He had given great opportunities to the sons of Levi, which Korah had. And as the cousin of Moses, you would think he would have been a little more supportive. And yet Jude 11 uses him as one of three examples, with Cain and Balaam, of those who take the direction of a heretic. Let's make sure that we're learning from these examples. These are given for our admonition. And if we think we would never do that, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. For there's no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. God is faithful. He will not allow us to be tempted above that we are able, but will with the temptation make a way to escape, that we will be able to bear it. So let's look to him that we would be found faithful, that we would learn from these to resist those rebel tendencies that can rise up in all of our hearts when we think we know better. We think this way would be best when we don't have all the information. And to realize God does not look lightly on rebellion, but he will take care of his own. And God is a God of mercy, that even in this judgment, because of Moses and Aaron, they weren't all wiped out. It truly was the mercy of God. And that we would then learned that they had great spiritual opportunities, but that wasn't enough. We have to strive to be faithful. Let's pray together.